Hi, this is Reb Brown, Captain America, from the original CBS television movies. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome, Comic Book Nation. This is Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Just one more week until I am walking the show floor of Connecticut Comic Con with my fellow IndieCast podcaster and organizer of Comic Con, Mitch Halleck, and also another IndieCaster, Laird Malamed, who you will also hear on the Bondcast. He'll be joining us as well. I'm going to be recording some fantastic content while I'm at the show. I'll be part of one panel. I'm going to be moderating a Q&A with William Catt, the greatest American hero, meeting and hopefully interviewing a bunch of celebrity guests, comic books, cosplayers, gaming. There's tons of stuff there. And to celebrate Batman's 75th anniversary, there's going to be a bunch of Batmobiles at the convention as well. Check this out.
Unleash your power when Connecticut Comic-Con hits the Webster Bank Arena. There'll be celebrity guests, legendary comic book creators, famous movies and TV vehicles. Shop for comics, collectibles, and cool stuff. Dress as your favorite character and enter costume contests for kids and adults. Meet your favorite voice actors and see a reunion of the cast of the Thundercats. Tickets on sale now, online, and at the arena box office. Join us on August 15th through 17th for Connecticut Comic-Con. 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 Comic-Con.
Friday, August 15th at 7:15 p.m. If you're at the convention, be sure to check out the panel, How to Do a Podcast. Mitch, Laird, myself, Brian Letendre, and Mattman Herring from the Secret Identity Podcast. We're all going to be there, and we're all going to be talking about podcasting, all things podcasting. Be sure to check out that panel if you're there. And Sunday at noon, I'll be moderating a Q&A session, as I mentioned, with William Catt from The Greatest American Hero. Again, if you're at the convention, stop by and say hi. If you can't make it, you can still be a part of the show. Send me your questions for William Catt, Ray, Darth Maul, Park, and Maximiliano Hernandez from Captain America Winter Soldier. Send me your questions. Send them to me at joe@comicbookcentral.net. I will do my best to work those into the session and into some of the interviews. Send those along. I'd love to take a look at them. Speaking of Captain America, this particular episode of Comic Book Central features yet another stellar guest. Today, I'm going to be talking to television's original Captain America, Reb Brown. December 1940, the clouds of war were sweeping across Europe, moving ever closer to the United States, and two comic book creators, repulsed by the tyranny of Nazism and Adolf Hitler, spoke out through the pages of the comics as only they could. Writer Joe Simon, along with artist Jack Kirby, premiered their creation, the Sentinel of Liberty, Captain America, 1 year before the attack on Pearl Harbor. Captain America Comics issue number 1 left the funny pages and subtlety in the ashes of battle. In fact, on the cover of that very first issue, which sold nearly a million copies, the hero, Captain America, is seen punching Hitler squarely on the jaw. Comic books grew up, and grew up fast. In the post-war era, with folks trying to leave the past behind, interest in Cap began to fade, and his comic book was canceled in 1954. But you can never keep a good superhero down. A decade later, Stan Lee teamed up with Kirby to bring Captain America back. Thawed out from suspended animation after being trapped in ice for decades, Captain America was once again front and center, this time on the cover of Avengers issue number 4. Throughout those years, Cap was brought to life in various projects. In 1944, a 15-chapter Republic serial thrilled audiences and movie theaters everywhere. In this version, Cap's alter ego isn't Soldier Steve Rogers, it's District Attorney Grant Gardner, played by Dick Purcell. No super soldier serum, no shield, and Cap was packing heat. But it was a start. Captain America throws his mighty shield in the 60s cartoon, but for the 70s, something more was needed. And we got more. The CBS network was a treasure trove of live-action superheroes at that time. We got TV versions of Spider-Man, the Hulk, Wonder Woman, and Doctor Strange. Those all hit the airwaves, and Captain America was next in line. In the 1979 TV movie, up-and-coming actor Reb Brown was cast as the Star-Spangled Avenger. His character is named Steve Rogers, and he's more than likely the son of the original Captain America. Injected with a super steroid, Reb filled out the spandex, got a style in 70s van, a slingable shield, awesome theme music, and a souped-up jet-propelled motorcycle. The movie was a hit and a sequel was immediately ordered. That same year saw Captain America 2, Death Too Soon, featuring Reb, Len Berman, the lovely Connie Selica, and the great Christopher Lee as the villainous Miguel. Well, my guest today is an actor who helped lay the groundwork for the Marvel movie and TV universe we know today. He was the first actor since 1944 to portray the Sentinel of Liberty, Captain America. He is Reb Brown. Reb, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
I love having you here today. And you know what? When I had a chance to speak to your Cage and Cage 2 co-star, Lou Ferrigno, he mentioned that he was inspired by comic books and heroic action heroes when he was a child. What were your inspirations when you were younger?
Well, you know, I loved Superman, of course, you know, when I was a kid. And I had the comic books. I had the Captain America, which really turned out beautifully when I was able to do it. And I enjoyed that stuff. It's neat seeing heroes that, you know, they're not complicated. They're just, you know, good and true. And that's basically what Captain America was. And
yeah,
I like the Hulk, too, because the Hulk was kind of like, well, you get frustrated. That'd be nice to be able to do that. But you can't do it, really.
Because we talked to Kenneth Johnson, and he mentioned about how when he was writing that, he was kind of, it's the Hulk, you know, he's on there, but he was kind of tapping into those inner demons that we all have that all manifest themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, there's that psychological aspect that you'd like to just Hulk out on occasion, you know?
Exactly. Just, you know, just once in a while, just say, you don't want to see me angry. Just
oh, too bad that only works on television.
Exactly.
All right, so you got into comic books when you were younger. What was the sort of appeal? You mentioned the strong moral centers that these characters have.
I grew up, and my father was a policeman, okay? So I knew, you know, he worked for 30 years for the LAPD. And, you know, the basic element of good and, you know, good and evil, I mean, I knew what it was about, and that exemplified it, you know, because you look at the comic books and, you know, it's cut and dried, especially the Captain America. You know, there's no false pretenses, nothing else going on. It's just about the underdog and helping people, you know. There's no pretense about it. And that's one of the things I love so much about the Captain America character. It's true. It's American, you know. And, you know, you get in some of the other characters and there's the dark side and this and that. And I like that, the purity of it all. I think that's probably the thing that I enjoyed the most. And, of course, I loved the Westerns. I loved the Westerns as a little boy. And I go around and, you know, I quick draw and stuff like that and got pretty good at it. In fact, I remember a little film that my parents had when we were in the backyard. And I'd ride around in the backyard with my rooster on the handlebars and my sidearm.
Like a little Lone Ranger action inspired by Clayton Moore a little bit?
Lone Ranger and then the Cisco Kid and all of those. And then, of course, growing up, you know, I loved the Manza, Laredo with William Smith, you know, Gunsmoke, and some fond memories of watching, you know, those old cowboys, you know, Maverick and all of those shows. And I really enjoyed those, and they were fun to watch.
Yeah, we kind of moved away from that a little bit. There's a lot more gray areas to heroic figures now, or these sort of, you know, the lines are becoming blurred. A little bit. What do you
just
think about that?
Just like the world. Yeah. Well, just like the world. I mean, you know, it's not cut and dried anymore. You know, there's so many times that it's shaded, you know, and you can go either direction in that way, and then there's always an excuse for either way. Well, it's just the fact about nowadays, you know, there's so many people blaming everybody else for everything that's going on, and nobody wants to take responsibility for their own actions. And I think that's a big problem. And you know, I grew up and I remember having three jobs at one time, you know. I worked in the bar as a bouncer, you know, I worked at a health club, I was a janitor at a bank, all three at the same time. And, you know, nowadays, kids don't want to do that. They don't want to, you know, work unless it's an executive job. A lot of times that just seems the way it is. And it's frustrating to me because that's how you build character in somebody. Because if you work for something, you're going to appreciate it a lot more than you do if it's given to you.
Yeah, you had some of those rough jobs starting out. You mentioned a bouncer in a bar, too. You were an amateur boxer as well, too, correct?
Yeah, I fought 14 times, and I won 12 and lost 2. And we won't discuss those.
The two. Anybody we know?
No, I'm not going to say anything.
Fair enough. But hey, cool. Captain America doesn't lose, right? Come on, they were draws, right?
That's the nice thing about it is, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, thinking about a story that we were talking about when I was on Venice Beach when I told you I came out of my motorhome when we were filming Captain America. And when it was one of the biggest hoots I've ever had in my life. I came out in full Captain America regalia. You know, Venice Beach, California is, you know, you talk about a cross-section of humanity. It's like Star Wars bar.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're seeing some of that in the beginning of Captain America 2, I think. Exactly. You see all those characters walk. Yeah, so we got the setting right. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so I come out of my motorhome, and I'm in full dress, and there's this poor guy on the wall, and he's obviously been drinking very heavily. And he looks out, and he goes, "Man, I got to stop drinking." And he falls down, Joe. He falls down off of the wall. And, of course, he blew me, you know, all out of my character. All of a sudden, oh, okay, you know.
Yeah, the boots, happening? The shield, the helmet, the
full night. Yeah, I was just, you know, I was there, you know, looked like a poster shot. And then he crawls back up the wall, and he's sitting there, and he's blinking at me, okay? He's blinking. Well, maybe I don't have to stop drinking.
Well, sir, of course, Captain America's right there, right?
Exactly. It was real.
Man.
You know, he couldn't believe it. It was funny. But
Captain,
I mean,
America battling alcoholism early on in the 70s.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
funny.
What sort of sparked that early interest in sports? Because you were a fullback at USC, too, correct?
Yes. I played, you know, in high school. I was football, basketball, and baseball. I was an All-American in high school in football, in All-League and basketball. And then in baseball, I was all Southern California, and there was interest in me from the Angels. Way back when.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and, you know, it's just, and then.
Did you try out with that?
No, I didn't, because I got a, you know, scholarship for football.
Okay.
You know, for SC. But I played, you know, all three of those sports, and I did very well in them. That's back when, you know, kids could play all the sports and still function.
But oh, so they were interested in you for baseball coming out of high school?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good then. So, I mean, football, I mean, why were you going from baseball to football? I mean, you know, two great sports, but they're two different completely.
Well, football, you know, at the time, I mean, was interested me more, you know, and looking back, I wish that I would have gone the other direction because when I, you know, I ended up going to SC and I actually went there I was a tailback on the freshman team. And my freshman year, O.J. Simpson comes in. And that was it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they said,
wasn't the first time you crossed paths with O.J. Simpson, too, was it?
Yeah, then, that was the first time, yeah. Then the second time was a goalie and the boxer.
Right.
Yeah.
And, serendipity.
You never know what's going to happen in your life.
Were you a pretty good fullback, though? I mean, that your size just had to have been just unbelievable.
Yeah, my theory when I played was, run a straight line. If somebody gets in the way, we'll figure out what happens.
Yeah. And what? You're 6'4 at this point?
I'm 6'3 and a half. I was 230.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're winning. I think you're winning that battle. That's a good philosophy for a fullback.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you hurt a little, I'll hurt a little.
So you're tossing guys out of bar windows and stuff, and this is when you're discovered in Hollywood?
The actual thing happened was I was in a bar called the Handlebar Saloon in Pasadena, California.
Great name.
And right next to the Handlebar Saloon was the Ice House, which is a place where people used to go play, you know, the folk music and all of these things. Well, a gentleman came in that night, and he was waiting for his client to go perform over at the Ice House. And I was in there, and I was about 240, I guess. And I had, you know, blonde, curly hair, tank top, Fu Manchu mustache. I had a guy in either hand going out the door, okay, and these guys are being rowdy. And
you got two guys.
Yeah, I had two guys, one in each hand. And the guy says, he says, "Hey kid, you want to be an actor?" I says, "Just a moment." And I went out and, you know, and banged these guys together, and I said, "Now go home," you know, and they threw him out the front door.
Oh.
And I come back in, and he says, "You want to be an actor?" I says, "I don't know, man." Because he goes, "That'll work." And then after that, I got interested in it, and I started, you know, working on the craft a little bit, and then I got an audition over at Universal for, remember that one? Do you know which one I'm talking about? That was with Dirk Benedict and Heather Menzies and Struther Martin. It's
yeah, one of the greatest movie titles of all time, just all S's. Somehow I remember seeing this as a kid. I don't know if my sister dragged me to it when she was babysitting or if I caught on TV. All I remember is being freaked out. Wasn't there like some mongoose thing at the end and this guy
the mongoose, and the lead snake, which was Dirk Benedict.
Yeah, I just remember being freaked out by this movie as a kid. And that's your first gig right out of the gate, right?
Yeah, I did that. I had a week's work on that, and I got into the Guild. And then after that, you know, I mean, it's not like you're going to all of a sudden you're going to just be, you know, discovered and go boom, you know.
Right. No, you're a contract player at Universal at this point, right? Under the old contract system?
No, not yet.
Oh, not at that point? Okay.
Then I went under, you know, then I went on the Sheriff's Department for about a year and a half, and then I ended up under contract at Universal.
Well, you got a lot in common with Lou Ferrigno. I mean, his dad was a police officer. You know, he's been in the sheriff's department. You guys have been movies together. Yeah, so, just a parallel career path here as well.
You know, Lou's a good guy, too. I like him. He's a good guy.
When did the contract at Universal come about?
Well, after there was a movie called The Girl Most Likely To. Okay, and it was with Stockard Channing. And I went in and read for it, and they ended up giving the role to Larry Wilcox for the linebacker, okay? But I got in the movie, and you know, they figured, geez, if he can go out and get stuff, you know, like that, let's put him in the contract. So I did the contract for about a year and a half at Universal, and then, you know, banged around and I did, you know, some other television stuff and was working in bars as a bouncer, and this was in the South Bay, which is, you know, like Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach. And I was working down there, and then I did a few things, and I got a Happy Days. Then I did a Class of 65, which was a Universal project. And then all of a sudden, they became interested in me again. Universal did.
Yeah.
And after that, then, you know, they started looking for stuff. And I'll tell you, you know, waiting to get Captain America was, you know, because I had a show with Barbara Stanwyck that was called Tony Boys over at Spelling. And they offered me the thing, you know, sight unseen, so to speak, without a screen test and everything for 11 episodes, which would have been a heck of a lot of good money back then.
Yeah.
And Universal wouldn't release me. Mm. They did that on three pilots. And the one that, you know, they had 11 episodes, it wasn't renewed, but I mean, 11 episodes, but it would have been, you know, especially being, you know, just married, so to speak, you know, getting there. And then I met with Alan Balter down the line, and I ended up doing Captain America. It was like, you know, we just connected. We sat down and connected, and he was a good guy, and he had done $6 Million Man with Lee Majors, okay?
Yeah, you had a couple and, guest shots on there as well, too, right?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and it was, you know, funny, I played a policeman on it.
Typecast anyway. As a lawman already, so.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
We had a lot of great stuff. Well, you mentioned Captain America. Before we get to that, which is obviously, you know, on Comic Book Central, our favorite of your projects, but, man, we talked about some of these things on your resume here. I'm looking at Uncommon Valor. You got a chance to star with the legendary Gene Hackman, who, you know, in our worlds, he's always going to be Lex Luthor, but what did you learn from Gene Hackman on the set of Uncommon Valor?
Just complete professionalism. I mean, he just was a really great guy, just a wonderful human being. You know, not pretentious, not I'm the star, da-da-da-da. He did everything with us. I mean, and he had, at the time, he had a pretty bad knee, and he was, you know, I mean, we were going through the woods and stuff there in Hawaii and Valencia, and he was just, you know, trucking on with it. I mean, and I was very impressed by the fact that he did that. And he said, hey, you guys, you're going to wear makeup? He says, I don't feel like wearing makeup. He says, well, we don't feel like we're wearing makeup.
And Hackman's making a call at that point.
He did a wonderful thing. We were over in Thailand. And, you know, in Thailand, they have open markets. You know, like they have the goose and the chickens and all that stuff. Just,
yeah, everything's
just hanging out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and we were about to film there. And this is, you know, one of the scenes that we had in the movie. And Gene looks at us. He goes, are you guys getting sick? I said, yeah, man. he goes, all right, we're gonna have the production company buy all this up and get this out of here. So they bought it all up and gave it to the people, which I thought was really cool.
Wow. So is he kind of like the sort of the leader of your troop there, even off camera?
Well, he had, you know, he was more up into the, he had his own private place, like a big place overlooking the ocean and stuff. You know, yeah. We didn't really socialize that much because he's a pretty private person. He's a great guy on the set. He's, you know, he's wonderful. You know, I mean, you couldn't ask for just a more, you know, congenial guy. He was nice.
No,
I liked him.
No Lex Luthor talk on the set, though, right?
No, we didn't.
And
that.
The superheroes come up, yeah, I'm Captain America, you're Lex Luthor.
No, we didn't discuss that. We figured, well, better let him talk his wife.
Yeah, his check cleared, and he was off the second one. So, yeah, after he was out of there after the second one, so.
I did remember, I don't know if you would ever remember, but I said, hey, I like your hair.
Nice. You know, one of these other comic book perfect storms happened. Cage and Cage 2, we talked about that. These movies seem to be the intersect point for Marvel comic book characters coming to life. Cage, the first one, we've got yourself, Captain America, Lou Ferrigno,
right.
The Incredible Hulk, and Carl Chiafarlo, The Thing. In Cage 2, we've got yourself, Lou, and then Michael Bailey Smith, The Thing's counterpart, Ben Grimm.
Do
you guys get together and talk comic books on the set at all? Or just in between punches?
We were so busy trying to choreograph and remember what we were doing without getting hit. There wasn't a lot of time for that.
Well, and Captain America throw down with the Hulk?
No, I didn't throw down with the Hulk. But I'll tell you some funny stuff about Lou. He's, you know, he's got a great sense of humor. I remember, you know, those guys would do, you kind of mess around when you're filming scenes, you know?
Yeah.
And he'd look at me and he goes, gosh, Reb, you're really strong.
Wow.
I go, shut up.
Now, was he being snarky or was he being serious?
Oh, he was teasing me.
All right. Okay. I didn't know if it was like you surprised him or if this was like, you know, look, I'm the Hulk. You're Captain America. It's not, this isn't working.
I worked out a couple of times with him at the gym, okay? And I mean, I did well, comparatively speaking, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, the amount of weight that he was lifting compared to me, I thought, well, you know, I better stick where I'm at.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're a big dude, but he's the Hulk. I mean,
oh,
he
yeah.
was, you know, yeah, this guy was just amazing. Another one of your cool projects that has gone on to another life, Space Mutiny.
Yeah.
You shot this one in Africa?
Yeah, we shot that in Africa.
This is you and your wife, Sissy Cameron.
Yeah, Sissy Cameron and I and John Philip Law.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were shooting there, and then my wife and I, which was really a lot of fun to be together and do that together, and we had a lot of fun on that. We were laughing, you know, about the, when we were doing the little go-karts or whatever, you know, and then you have things show up, like one of the women who's just been killed will show up in the next scene.
Yeah. And all the special effects from Battlestar Galactica, right?
Oh, I know, exactly. And I mean, and the guys, when the guy's doing some of the special effects, I mean, you know, you got to be careful, especially on the foreign productions. You know, you get blown up.
Yeah.
And when we had one where I picked up my wife and I had to run, and then I think the little spaceship behind me blew up or whatever it was. Well, I ran and I took off, and I could. And when the explosion happened, I felt this singe of heat on the back of me. Okay. So I kept running. I ran right over the cameraman. I mean, I'm glad that I did what I did because, you know, it was scary. She could have caught on fire because I had it right over my shoulder, you know?
Oh, well, I mean, you go into some of these other countries you're shooting because you shot a lot of films in a lot of other countries.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm guessing the regulations aren't the same as, like, you know, a Paramount production or something like that.
Are you kidding? You just take your life into your hands a lot of times. I remember on Strike Commando. There was a guy that was a demolition guy. Now, you know, and they were obviously ripping off Rambo the whole time, okay? And they had me running up this rice paddy, and I'm running up this rice paddy, and he's got these explosions going off behind me. Yeah, the guy was setting off the explosions, was upstairs, was up on top of the rice paddies drinking wine. You got to be very, very careful and very alert and pay attention to what's going on, because if you don't, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, the safety regulations just aren't the same.
Yeah. Here's one for you. It's the last flight from hell. I'll never forget. They had an M60 machine gun. I'm supposed to take off on an airplane, okay?
Right.
They did not have the adapter on the machine gun, okay? So it would be firing live ammo. They said, don't worry, Reb, we'll just fire ahead of the airplane. They said, no, nope, we're not doing this.
You put your foot down.
Oh, yeah. My God. I mean, these guys, you know, and then they're giving you live rounds. And you happen to know what an M203 is?
I don't, but I'm guessing that it can do some damage if you're not looking at it properly on set.
Yeah. It's an M16 with a rocket, a grenade launcher put on it, okay? They say, now, don't pull the trigger on this because this is live ammo. Now, you pull it, you know, and you hit one of those, they're 100 yards away, it can blow up a tree.
Is there any chance they could fake any of this at the time? They have to use, like, live ammo?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I look back, and my wife was laughing. She said, honey, you know, you should write a book. It says Body Count. You know?
I think we'd buy it. Well, Space Mutiny sort of has taken on a new life here with the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Have you seen their version of it?
Yeah, I did. I laughed. I laughed my rear end off. I mean,
okay,
I
so you're okay with it?
Oh yeah, heck, it's comedy. You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, you can't take yourself tech seriously in those things. You know, it was fun. They paid us, you know, we got to go to Africa and it was neat. And I was with my wife. I mean, you know, what more can you ask for? It was great.
Have you ever met the guys from Mystery Science Theater?
No, I never have.
I would think at one of these comic conventions, your paths will cross at some point. That would be kind of interesting. But I love the scene. It's even on YouTube. They put it on there with all the different names that they call your character.
Oh, yeah. I have people come up and they want me to sign something. They give me one of those names. And I go, that's a new one.
I think there's like 50 or 60 of them.
Oh, at least. And
Dirk Hardpeck, Bulk Vanderhuge, Rip Steakface, Gristle McThornbody was one of my personal favorites. This is great.
This guy had one. He brought, you know, because I have a little a blow up of like the poster, you know.
Right.
And then I'll sign that. And then they asked me to put, you know, they say, well, put these names on there. Crack me up.
At least you can play along with that all these years later. That's a pretty cool one. Right. Before we get to the big comic book movie, though, I want to talk about an Argentinian comic book. Your The Hunter from the Future was the movie.
It was that Italian. I've got the original Yor in Italian.
Is it an Italian comic book?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I was thinking it was Argentinian, but it is a, to us here in the States, a foreign comic book. But a movie that we're all familiar with, Yor the Hunter from the Future, combining some elements of Beneath the Planet of the Apes and Commandy, Last Boy on Earth. You got to go sci-fi prehistoric on this one.
Well, we ran the gamut on that, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's a lot of everything.
Yeah, I went from having a hatchet to having a spray gun.
Yes. I mean, all in the span of an hour and a half.
Yeah, in an hour and a half. Well, that thing was actually 12 hours in Europe.
Oh, it was like a mini-series, yeah.
Yeah, I was there for 6 months.
Oh. What kind of shoot was this that you're going through? I mean, it had to be brutal for that long.
It was. And I mean, you know, as far as exercise equipment back at that time in Turkey,
yeah,
they had none. They had the old round balls, you know, like you see in the cartoons with the dumbbells, the round ones. And then that's the place where I started doing like 1,000 push-ups every other day.
Well, I mean, you have to look. I mean, you have to maintain this look of this. I mean,
exactly.
You're just like almost like this ripped bodybuilder as you're going through it, so.
Exactly. And then they brought us up to, you know, in the film there, we have those places that they're made out of rock, and then they're actually where people lived, you know, at one time. They were actually hewn right out of rock. And that's where St. Paul was. It was, you know, of Tarsus. That's where he was up there. And they had a hotel was called let's see, what was it? The Grand Hotel. And this is the only place I've ever been in, Joe, where you could go to the bathroom and put on the shower at the same time.
Five star accommodations, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh, the memories you have of Yore.
Oh yeah, it was just incredible. I mean, running around in a loincloth and there's snow on the ground, like you could. Yeah, I'll be fine.
it's definitely a different film for anybody that hasn't seen it. So yeah, it's one of these. It just mixes so many different genres, but pretty cool.
Well, one thing I want to say about that is that, you know, when you do a film like that, you're going to have people speaking different languages, okay?
Yeah.
And you're doing a scene. You got one speaking Turkish, one speaking Italian, one speaking something else. And I look at the director, and he said, "Don't worry, I'll fix it."
How difficult is that for you as a performer when the crew is speaking something different, the director is speaking another language, you're trying to figure out, is there a translator there, you know, faster, slower, go up here, anything like that?
Well, we had one, American that was, had gone to Italy, and he translated for me, you know. But after a while, I understood everything was going on just by the inflection and everything, you know. And you just, it's making movies. That's just what you understand.
Yeah.
And like when in the Philippines, when nobody really spoke English except myself or, you know, some of the other cast members, the director would go, "Capito?" And I said, "Yeah, capito. I understand what you're saying." You know, just look at you and you do the thing with your hands. You go, "Oh, okay."
Yeah. And in all honesty, it's a loincloth. It's a hatchet and dinosaurs. So pretty much if you're going in the right direction, you can nail the part.
Exactly. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm going to be a fellow and I'm going to be on stage.
These soliloquies or anything. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, our favorite film here at Comic Book Central, Captain America, two TV movies on CBS in 1979. What was your background with the character of Captain America? You talked about reading the comics. Did you kind of go back and do some homework with these things? I mean, it's a different take on the character completely in the TV movies.
He's supposed to be my father. Okay, and then what I did is I went back and I checked this out and found out, you know, about the Germans and World War II. Well, geez, everybody was so desperate to have somebody that was a hero, you know, and it made so much sense. And I mean, somebody to go after the Nazis, and you know, the Red Skull, it just made sense. And so for me, it was an easy transition as far as believing that it would take place, and you know, that I want to follow my father's footsteps. I'm reluctant to start with, but once it's between life and death, there's no choice.
Yeah. Now, it's not fully explained in the movie, but and they reference that, yeah, you are the son of Steve Rogers. Did you get a sense when you were filming, or did they even say in the initial script or anything like that, that this was the Captain America we know and love from the 40s? Or was he more of like a soldier that was experimenting with different things? Because he kind of had this super steroid, they call it.
Yeah, it was a little bit more ambiguous, you know. I think that the general consensus was that's who it was,
okay.
You know, as far as the people. Yeah, and that's the way I felt about it, yeah. You know. And like at the end of the first one, they had me come out in the new Captain America outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, they had made one up that was just completely different, you know,
right.
And they had some very very elaborate things going on. They had these boots that were not comfortable to ruin him. And, you know, not as functional. I mean, the original one, you know, it's pretty hard to beat the original. It just makes sense. That's just it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that by doing that and coming across, and then people always ask, why did you have to wear a helmet? Well, the reason was is I was on a motorcycle, and I had to. Because safety reasons, they would not allow me not to.
Safety first, even for Captain America.
Absolutely. And why was the shield clear? Well, the shield was clear because then you had to have that on the motorcycle and you had to be able to see through it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the windscreen on the motorcycle that detaches and becomes a shield.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's what it is, yeah.
This was at a time when Universal had a development deal with Marvel to adapt a bunch of these different properties. We had Spider-Man, obviously the Hulk, Doctor Strange, kind of stumbled out of the gates. Stan Lee was trying to get a lot of these different projects off the ground. Did you get a chance to meet and work with Stan Lee?
I met him, the second one I met him. And what happened on this thing, which was really troubling to me, is that Marvel Comics on the Hulk, as far as the licensing fee, was $2,500 an episode. Now, CBS wanted to buy Captain America for, I can't remember how many episodes, but it was a number of episodes, okay? But Marvel Comics, because somebody at Universal had let the contract lapse with Marvel, okay, as far as what is negotiated as far as the licensing fee, and Marvel upped it to $50,000 an episode. Mm. So it completely threw everything into a wrench, because back then, I mean, you know, it wasn't as near expensive to making a show as it was, you know, like nowadays.
Yeah, well, $50,000 an episode, I mean, that's a huge chunk of your budget back at that time, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was. It was. I'd be riding the motorcycle around the living room.
Was there any thought to, because this was developed as a series, obviously. I got a sense, you get a sense when you're watching it that it's kind of like trying to emulate, we talked about $6 Million Man, but it's almost like that. Yeah. There's an Oscar Goldman character with Dr. Simon Mills, the great Len Berman.
Yep.
You've kind of got that, and then even the sound effects, you almost kind of get that little da-na-na-na-na, you know, a little bit when he's doing some of these things. So it's kind of like trying to emulate $6 Million Man. Was there anything between Marvel and Universal was like, guys, come on, we can do this, but you got to lower this price?
Well, hopefully they did. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't, I just found out that they lost it.
That's it. Gone. You're on to the next project.
Yeah, and they said that they had lost the contract viability as far as being able to do it, because they wanted too much for the licensing fee and they weren't going to budge because they felt that they didn't get enough for the Hulk.
Yeah. Oh, it sets up perfectly for sort of like a $6 Million Man series to come out of this, too.
Oh, yeah.
What about the creators of Captain America, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby? Did you get a chance to meet them at all?
No, I never got to meet them. Mm. I never did. You know, I think what happened is with Universal is they kind of wanted to keep people away from what they were doing, because they figured, well, we know what we're doing. Mm. You know, that's just my opinion, you know, but I remember meeting Stan, but I mean, he was upset with the costume in the first one, which he should have been.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not having enough hands-on, I would think. You know, I mean, somebody should have been there to look over that and make sure that it was taking place properly the way they want it.
Did they ever explain why? Because you are wearing a certain costume through most of the first movie, and then right at the very end it changes to sort of the classic look. Was that because of that whole issue, or was that in the script?
Yes, it was. Okay. That was it. And what they claimed it was the thing for, I want to be like my father. Okay, I want to have the same thing as my father. So then that's what they switched it over to.
Yeah.
But originally, I'm sure that Marvel was upset with it, which they should have been.
So that's almost like just an added on. So they had gotten some feedback, and it's like, let's put the scene at the end where you come out in the classic.
Exactly.
Got it. Wow. And then moving forward, here it is. So yeah, well, that's that's interesting. Now, I thought it was an interesting take on the character too, because they obviously don't have the money for the special effects at the time to make you look all scrawny like they kind of do in the new movies and then bulk up. You are who you are in the movie. But I thought it was an interesting take. Was this originally where it's like he's the sensitive kind of artist, where he's real laid back, real reluctant, and then all of a sudden he puts the suit on and it's like, boom, now he can take care of business.
Basically what took place is that, you know, here I was, I just out of the Marines, I wanted to kick back. I just wanted to enjoy my life and drive around my van, you know. And these guys found out who I was, and they decided that they weren't going to go for that. And by almost killing me, they ended up giving me the steroid, which was I was reluctant to have because I refused it originally, if you remember.
Right.
I said, I don't want it. Yeah. And then it was like, well, I'm here now, and I'm going to do it. And that's just what took place, and which is, you know, is just resigned to the fact that this is my job now, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah, he just wanted to drive around in the van and paint.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and enjoy life, you know. Right. And then, you know, I ended up converting the van to a motorcycle, and you see it on Conan all the time.
Yeah. Well, I like how one reviewer put it. He said, Steve has an unnatural affinity for falling off rocky cliffs and motor vehicles. Like, the first half of the movie is just you just going over the cliff. It's like, okay. Get the steroid in the guy already.
Yeah, exactly. Just shoot him up. Get it over with here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Now, what were your thoughts when you put the costume on for the first time? Because we always hear these things, you know, like William Catt sees the Greatest American Hero costume. He's like, oh, I'm going to live this forever, you know? Or, you know, what were your thoughts when you first put this thing on?
I was proud because I thought, you know, this is something really cool. And I was just thrilled with the aspect of the way the kids respond to it. They love it. You know, even to this day, the kids just, they love the Captain America character, and it makes you feel good inside. It really does. I had a little boy at this recent signing, you know, and he must have been about 5 or 6 years old. And, you know, I signed a picture for him, and then they wanted to have a picture, so I took a picture with him. And I put him, you know, I put him on my knee, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had him there like that, and I hugged him, and I said, "You're a good little guy, okay?" And then he got up, and his father had the picture, okay? And he took it from his father. He said, "This is mine."
Oh, nice. Another generation.
Exactly. Another exactly.
Generation. Oh, that's got to just, that's got to make it all worthwhile.
It does. It makes you feel so good inside because, you know, you really are affecting some of these kids, you know, with their idea about life and things, you know, and then they see you in that aspect. Like I say, the Captain America character is such, it's the purity of it is so incredible.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing about it is, you know, you don't want any of that dark stuff in there. I mean, I know that there's call for that because, the world's changed. But when you have just, you know, just a pure, only thought is to do good for people. I mean, how can you beat that? You know, you just can't. Yeah. And you can't help but root for that.
We like when our comic book heroes were down the straight and narrow back in the day. It was always kind of cool. Now, the motorcycle, how many of the stunts were you allowed to perform? How much do we see you
not
on
a
motorcycle?
Whole lot because, not a whole lot because I'm prone to fall.
You're not good on motorcycles?
No, I did.
And
I did
that's why Captain America wears a helmet.
Exactly. No, they had some real professionals doing some of that stuff. I mean, these guys were motocross and stuff like that. And one of the things on the motorcycle itself, it had because of the large fairing, it had a shutoff switch when you would turn the wheel or the handlebars to the left or to the right a certain distance, it would actually shut off the engine, okay, or shut off the accelerator because you would be at such an angle. Well, a couple of times that happened to me, and I gunned it and accelerated out of it, and I'm glad I was wearing a helmet because it went right off the back. Yeah. I remember that one they had. Yeah, and then they had that one where, you know, I'm supposed to run into the bushes on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
I did that very well. I just, you know, I had my old fullback theory applied to that. Just, okay, just, you know, don't let it hurt it. Don't let it hurt me. Let it me hurt it. You know?
Straight ahead. Straight yeah, ahead and see what happens.
Yeah,
see,
exactly,
all
yeah.
these things come back full circle when you're doing these. All these things that inspire your performance. Well, we had the second one, obviously, a TV movie sequel, a very rare shot at a second pilot. CBS really wanting this thing to work. We have Captain America 2, Death Too Soon. Stronger villain this time around, the great Christopher Lee.
Wonderful human being.
Oh, did you get a chance to? You got a scene with him at the end. You guys kind of go toe to toe. Did you get to work with him off camera? Or did you get to talk to him much off camera?
We got to speak a lot, but you know, I did a movie with him later on called Howling 2. Yeah, and this is a gentleman that speaks 8 languages. He's really an incredible human being. I really enjoyed being with him and having a good time with him. Just a class act, you know, just a class act. I can't say enough good about him.
What did he teach you from your experiences working with him?
It's just you know, basically the same things that we, you know, the focus and just being, you know, prepared and knowing exactly what you're doing and what the story calls for. And he was marvelous. He was fun to work with. He really was. We had a good time. I like him.
Yeah, he plays a great villain in the piece too, a multi-layered villain too. So yeah, much stronger outing for the second one.
Yeah. Well, they were putting more money behind it. They wanted it to work, and it did. Like I say, it did sell, but then because of Marvel, you know, relinquishing on what their original deal was, then we weren't able to do it.
The greed of Hollywood, it always rears its ugly head. You know,
just think about it. If that thing would have been able to go on for a period of time just think about how it just could have been incredible. Just incredible.
Well, obviously at that point you're it's picked up, you're having these discussions. Where was the show supposed to go? What information trickled down to you? It was like, here's what we want to do with the Steve Rogers character.
Well, they're gonna do, you know, it's gonna be a weekly show. And they had, I think it was like 10 episodes that they, you know, they were already writing the scripts, but then they found out they lost the rights.
Yeah. I mean, they talked about plot lines or characters or villains or anything specific that they wanted to do with the show?
No, what they, from what I understood from Alan Balter, is that what they wanted to do is to make this interesting, you know, because in the one with Christopher Lee, they had more, you know, exotic characters and stuff like that, but it would have been too expensive to do some of the stuff with the animals and stuff, okay? So what they wanted to do is to try and incorporate that stuff and incorporate the things that were going on at the time, you know, and almost like a, you know, on society at that time and what was happening in our world and get involved in it. You know, I'm sure that
domestically or internationally.
Internationally, both. Wow. I mean, I think what would have happened too is, you know, like remember when Iran captured all those people. I'm sure that, you know, maybe down the line they would have probably got into something like that, figuring a way trying to get that involved.
Yeah. Well, that's always the thing, too, because we see on The Greatest American Hero, they always kind of talked about, are we going to do – there's even a line in the pilot where, you know, Ralph Hinckley can go take care of all these things, but it's like, let's take care of domestic issues first, and that's why they kind of kept it grounded there. And obviously they shot in L.A. the whole time. But there's always that option of, like, should we send Captain America off into these other countries, you know? So, interesting take.
Well, that would be like, Well, that would be like exactly what they do, you know, because, like, at the start of the season, you'd have a big one that goes someplace.
Right.
You know, that's what, you know, I imagine that's what they had planned, because that's what they, you know, back then the series would always do that. They'd go someplace that was different. And get away from, you know, because they wanted to, you know, get the interest going for the series and this season, you know. Yeah. And I'm sure that's probably what they had in mind. Hmm.
You know, as a huge comic book fan, I can buy just about anything in these two TV movies. But one thing I find it impossible to believe, Steve Rogers would absolutely hit on the stunning Connie Selica. Would your character, your character did not do it. I mean, come on. Let's talk a little bit about your co-star. What was your experience like working with the great Connie Selica?
It was fun. We had a good time. She was with Gil Gerard at the time, okay?
Yeah.
And he'd come by the set in his limo and you know, and come and pick her up. And I'd go, have a good time.
I'm not hitting on your wife, trust me.
Yeah.
I'm with some farmhand girl in wherever it was, Portland.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, so we had amazing fun in it. Yeah, she was a nice lady. I really enjoy her very much. And Heather Menzies is wonderful too. See, I worked with Heather in the first movie I ever did.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and it's the same character. So, but I think when you bring Connie in, it was almost like it was almost like that scientist type role, or you know, like an educator or something like that. But it just, it's two completely different takes on the same character. But I'm guessing that she was supposed to be the regular if the series got picked up.
Yeah, she was a regular. Yeah, and then and of course, you know, we she was nice. I liked her. You know, I had Sissy, and then she had Gil, and we teased each other. You know?
And if it would have been picked up as a series, your character would have hit on her character, correct?
I don't think so.
Oh, come on.
I'm not buying it.
I'll buy a hang gliding motorcycle, but I won't buy that. Not with Connie Selica around.
Okay. But that never was indicated to me, ever.
Oh, maybe in season two it would have happened. So.
Yeah.
Favorite moments filming these two movies? There's got to be a lot. I mean, there's so many,
well,
so many
good
cast members.
That one in Venice that time, the one in Venice with that guy on the wall, you know, rescuing that lady with a purse in Venice on that one, getting the guys out of the dune buggy. That was fun.
On the beach, you know, you're like running down the beach in full Captain America gear, chasing a dune buggy.
And pulling them out of it. It was pretty fun.
Now,
and
are then, people, did you guys, I mean, was there anybody there that was like, what is going on here? Or like, I mean, or is it like pretty much, because that's a huge stretch that you're filming on. I mean, are there some just people walking by that are like, what in the world?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. And they have to shut it off. And then you're going to get the locals there, you know, riding up and down on whatever they're doing. And,
yeah.
Oh, it was a trip. It was really a trip being there, like running around in that outfit and with that type of atmosphere was just fun.
Yeah, it's not often you see the Star Spangled Avenger running down the beach chasing a dune buggy.
Exactly. It was really heavy. People go, did you see? Wow, man.
So you know, like the surfer dudes, you know, they're just like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, man, where's my doobie? It's a school.
It's like a superhero, man. Did you get to keep the costume, or at least one of the costumes, the boots?
Anything? I had one. Yeah, it's gone now, but I had one at one time. And then the motorcycle, I heard, just came on eBay recently with Gary Davis, who was one of the stunt coordinators. Now that's really funny, because that motorcycle, I had it shipped over to Venezuela when I was doing a PR thing.
Yeah.
It disappeared there. And then it shows up now. It's really funny.
Oh, it's the same one?
Best of my knowledge. I haven't touched it. Yeah.
I'm surprised any of them survived, because like every scene it's getting trashed. You're like just jumping off it and leaving it go off in a ditch somewhere. Doc's flying by in a helicopter to pick it up.
Exactly. Yeah, pick it up. Yeah, because we're like James Bond with the boat.
Yes. Just dump it.
That's it, man.
Now, we've got a couple Captain Americas coming after us. We got Matt Salinger, played him in the 1990 film, and Chris Evans now. What do you think of those versions? Different, a lot more faithful to the actual comic book than the TV movies were. But what do you think of those two actors?
Well, as far as the Salinger and the other one, I did not like the movie at all. I thought it was just didn't make sense to me. It just didn't connect. You know, I didn't like it. And now, as far as Chris Evans, now I went to the premiere of the last one. I didn't see the one out now, but I think, hey, I think he's doing great things with the character, and I mean, he's doing a good job. I mean, you know, it's just I love the character, so I mean, I can't say anything negative about it. I just, you know, I think it's just wonderful that they're doing this, and it's amazing to me that they didn't realize the potential of this earlier, because that's what was always there.
Yeah, it seemed like it took a while just to kind of get these things off the ground. But, you know, you're going back to the 1940s, obviously, with these ones.
Yep.
Now we're bringing it up to the modern age. But do you get a kick out of watching comic book movies, these Marvel flicks, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., anything like that?
You know, I've only watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a couple of times, okay? But I do, as far as the comic books and stuff like that, I mean, I really enjoy them. The Avengers, and I saw that. I think one of the best scenes in the whole movie is when the Hulk comes down and bumps Thor off to the side.
Yes.
I get the biggest kick out of that, because that's exactly what would take place, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like, hey, man, I can take you out.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't forget what just happened. Yeah, I didn't forget the fact that you took me out a little earlier.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a great, great sense of humor in these movies. Has anybody talked to you about doing a cameo in any of them? Which, that's like the in thing to do now.
Well, originally there was. They had said that they would be in touch with me on the first one and the second one, and they never did.
Hmm.
And, you know, I had people, you know, basically call on it and ask on it, and they never did. And, I mean, I, you know, to be honest about it, it really kind of bummed me out, because I wanted to be involved in it. And but, you know, that's the way things go sometimes. I mean, you know, it's their movies. They can do what they want.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to see who's like a military general, or just even coming in and, you know, like maybe barking an order at Captain America or something like that. Or, yeah, I mean, that'd be...
Oh, yeah, I think that'd have been fun. You know, I think one of the things, too, is that I'm a lot larger than the characters that they have nowadays. You know, physically, I'm a lot bigger. I mean, you know, I've met these people, and they're not that large. So, I mean, be like my little brother, you know.
Although Chris Evans did do an amazing job bulking up for this thing. That was...
Oh yeah.
You guys had a chance to talk at all? Or I mean, have you ever run into him?
And when I went to the premiere, I didn't meet him. I met, you know, I was there with Thor, and I saw Thor and some of the other guys, which stunned me, because I thought Thor would be my size. Okay.
Yeah.
He's not. He's he's more like a bulked up Brad Pitt is what he's like.
I've seen you in a recent interview, and it looks like you could still suit up and take on the bad guys. I mean, what's the Reb Brown Captain America workout routine?
Well, let's see. I work out on, and you know, the Total Gym. You know, the Chuck Norris Total Gym.
Okay.
I do that with push-ups, and I do that three times a week, and then with the push-ups, I do, you know, about 300. And as far as exercises, that's the type of thing I've been doing now, is I do that Total Gym.
You're going back to your days, doing the push-ups.
You know what? It's a great exercise, and that Total Gym is great for the other parts too. It's amazing you get all that done. I get the biggest kick out of the fact, you know, because these people would see me, you know, on these shows, and they'd say, "Well, geez, I'm not a CGI Captain America. I'm full figured."
Yeah, that suit wasn't hiding a whole lot. There wasn't a lot of padding in that thing.
No, exactly. They go,
it's actual spandex.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, you're kind of dwarfing these guys. Latest projects? What are you up to now? What can we see you in? You did a recent movie where you're chasing Bigfoot.
Yeah, and I got killed by a woman, which was really intriguing.
There seems to be a theme in my recent podcast. I talked to Kenneth Johnson about the Bigfoot episodes of $6 Million Man. Dean Cain, he was chasing Bigfoot. Indiana Jones. I just did a review of a comic book where he was chasing Bigfoot. Now Captain America is chasing Bigfoot. What is up with Bigfoot? Did you catch him?
No, I didn't. I didn't even get to see him.
Bigfoot.
Yeah, Bigfoot. The lead Bigfoot took care of everybody and knocked everybody off in the film. It was quite
spoiler alert, right?
Yeah, exactly. He just knocks people off. But I mean, I was talking with Michael Pare at the show, and he said that he's going to do a Bigfoot up in Oregon, Portland, yeah.
Oh, from Greatest American Hero.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, everybody's chasing Bigfoot. Man, the movie is Night Claws. How can we see Night Claws?
It's on Amazon. You can go ahead and take a peek, and you can get a copy of that. And it's fun. I mean, it's different. It's, I play a sheriff in it, and everybody wants to see me go out and take on the Bigfoot, but I don't get a chance to. But it's a pretty good little movie. It's not bad.
Well, if you had your choice, we knew you could take him because you're Captain America. So
that's right. Yeah. Well, I would just, I'd take an extra shot before I go out to meet him, and that'd be fine.
Fling that shield. Bring it back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And a very big gun.
That would help. Yes.
Absolutely.
How can fans find out more about you? Website, Facebook, Twitter, anything like that? Or are you online anywhere?
Well, I'm going to, evidently, the lady that I'm working with is going to be, she's going to put out a thing. It's called The Edge of Nowhere, okay? And it's the people that, book me on the shows for bookings for, autographs and stuff. And then we're going to start putting pictures and stuff out there. And you know what? I'll give you a holler when it's up and running, okay?
Absolutely, yeah. We'll find you. Want to know where you're going to be. Yeah, you were just in Jersey at a convention?
Yes, I was. At Chiller, yes.
Very nice. What's the reaction you get from fans? I mean, I guess young and old coming up to you, right?
Yeah, it's fabulous. It really is. I mean, they're definite people that want to come and see me, which is really neat. I've had them come, up there in New Jersey. I've had them, from Philadelphia, Ohio, Atlanta, Georgia, all over the place. I mean, they come in and say, "We came here to see you, Mr. Brown."
Oh,
wow. I said, "Thank you very much."
Oh, that's gotta be so gratifying.
Yeah, and then you have the fathers of little ones. They want them to meet me because they just said, "This is what I grew up on, and I want you to meet them." Which is really sweet.
Yeah, you're our Captain America. You're our Captain America.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly. And that's what they say. They said, nobody else is going to be you. You're the original. So that makes me so good. Yeah. It really just warms your heart. Yeah, it really does. And the people are so friendly. And not one person this time said, "We don't look like that anymore."
Well, I mean, it resonated with me because I remember hearing the Mike Post, Pete Carpenter theme song. I was on my Huffy bike and I was pretending I was Captain America. So definitely resonated with me. So, hey, why do you think the character of Captain America still resonates with audiences nearly 75 years after his first appearance?
I think it's because of the purity of it. I mean, it was born in a time of really desperation because of the fear and everything that was going on, and people wanted to have somebody to believe in and care about, and somebody that could go out and take care of business. And it's the same way now. I mean, it's just things are different, but they're the same. And I think that Captain America really exemplifies that more than any other comic book hero. I mean, the purity of it's exciting to me. And that's why I'm glad that I'm associated with it.
Well, you are certainly a big part of that legacy that, as I said, spans nearly three quarters of a century. I hope we get to see you on the big screen in the next Cap flick. Reb Brown, thank you so much for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Telling you what, I think CBS missed out on a huge marketing opportunity back in the day. With that Captain America van and motorcycle, Kenner could have produced an awesome series of toys.
Oh, well, what could have been? But maybe if one of you listeners out there customizes action figures, you could maybe whip up a custom Reb Brown Captain America complete with van and motorcycle, maybe? If you do, send the pictures to me. I'll put them up on the Facebook page. My thanks again to Reb Brown for joining me on the show today. And hey, if you want to meet Reb in person and you're listening to this episode on the premiere date of Friday, August 8th, then tomorrow, Saturday, August 9th, Reb is going to be appearing at the Frank and Son Collectible Show. Yep, that's Saturday, August 9th at the Frank and Son Collectible Show. You can check out more information, frankandsonshow.net. Check it out online. And if you're listening after that date, you can still meet TV's original Captain America at the Chicago Toy Show, Sunday, October 26th. For more information, check out chicagotoyshow.com. And another opportunity to meet Captain America, Reb Brown. He's going to be appearing at the Rhode Island Comic-Con, November 1st and 2nd. You can find out more information online at the website, ricomiccon.com. And speaking of comic book conventions, oh, don't forget, I'm going to be attending Connecticut Comic-Con August 15th through the 17th. You can find out more online at comiccon.com. That's Comic-Con with two N's. And I hope to see you there. And I hope you continue to check out the latest episodes of Comic Book Central, or even the episodes you missed. There's 37 other great shows out there. The website, comicbookcentral.net. You can also subscribe to the show in iTunes. Do that. You won't miss an episode at all. And feel free to post a review in iTunes while you're there. I certainly appreciate it. You can also share the lair on Twitter and Facebook. Hashtag share the lair at facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork and Twitter at comicbookctrl. And be sure to drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net. I want to hear all of your questions for William Catt, Ray Park, Maximiliano Hernandez. Send them to me now. I'll get them in. I'm doing my homework now. I'm getting ready for Comic-Con. Get those to me, joe@comicbookcentral.net. Speaking of emails, I heard from Marco in Brazil regarding my conversation with Nicholas Hammond, a.k.a. Spider-Man. Marco writes in, he says, "Hey, my name is Marco, and I am a Columbia film grad and have studied screenwriting at UCLA. I'm a huge fan of your podcast and of your enduring love for pop culture. I'm writing from Brazil and have collaborated with film sites from Italy, France, Brazil, Spain, Portugal, the UK, and Belgium. And I'm one of the authors of a pioneering book on obscure movies. And I'm contributing with texts on a book about Westerns made in Brazil. I'm a huge fan of the Lord of the Flies version from the 1960s and have watched the Spider-Man TV movies that were released to packed Brazilian theaters. The Pilot, The Deadly Dust, and the one that was shot in Hong Kong. Being a fan of Mr. Hammond for so long, I've also looked for him in his Aussie projects. Frauds is masterful and has certainly influenced the big-budgeted toys with Robin Williams. Thanks for your time." Well, thank you, Marco. Thanks for writing in. I've not seen Frauds. I'm a huge Nicholas Hammond fan, but I've not seen that one. I'm going to have to check that out. And yeah, I love all those old Spider-Man TV shows as well. I've got my old copies here. I like to put them in, converted them to DVD. I like to watch them that way too. So thanks for writing in. And we also heard from Junior Jones, who sent me a link to a fan-made project that he's worked on with 26 other artists to recreate Detective Comics 27. That's the first appearance of Batman. You can check that out at the Indiana Jones Arc. That's ARC, the Indiana Jones arc.wix.com/Detective Comics 27. Thanks, Junior. Well, folks, like Captain America going into suspended animation in the 1940s, I'm going to be out of sight, but not out of mind. Thaw me out in a week, because next week on Comic Book Central, from the TV series Firefly and the feature film Serenity, Marina Baccarin will be my guest here in the lair. Hey, she was also the Black Canary on Justice League Unlimited. We're going to talk about all of those projects, so much more. Then after that, I am making my way to Connecticut for Comic-Con. Until then, have an amazing week. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
We got, was it Space Mutiny, man? Not too many people have an anniversary video like Space Mutiny, though, right?
Yeah, no, it's just... That's the truth, isn't it? When I first saw that on the, when I saw that on the, that thing with little robots, oh man, I cracked up.